Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes in out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
He's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
It was about 9:30 p.m. on November 30th, 2018, and Clackamas County Deputy Taylor Alexander was responding to a report from Welsh's of a suspicious person on East Welsh's Road. He arrived at the scene just as the incident turned into a shooting. The sound of gunshots and breaking glass filled the air. Deputy Alexander called for backup and made his way toward the house. He saw a man lying in the front yard, moaning in pain. His name was Eddie Osborne. He was 25 years old, and he had been shot in the head. Deputies Dan Olson, Gabe Adele, and Race Belmont and Josh Brown arrived at the scene and closed East Welsh's Road. The deputies split into two-man teams and moved towards the target house. Deputy Olson attempted to direct Osborne to crawl out of the front yard, but he did not respond. Working together, the deputies formulated a hasty rescue plan. Deputy Alexander covered the broken window with his rifle while Deputies Olson, Brown, and Belmont approached Osborne using the side of a patrol car as cover. Deputies Olson and Belmont reached the victim and dragged him to safety using their own bodies to shield him from potential gunfire. They transported Osborne to a medical personnel standing at a nearby thriftway. Deputy Brown rode with the victim to the hospital. Osborne survived. A suspect, Michael John Favara, was arrested the following day. Last week, the five deputies were presented with Sheriff's Medal of Valor, honoring acts of exceptional heroism. These deputies risked their lives to save this man, it said during Thursday's award ceremony. Their efforts were selfless and exhibit the very highest standards of our office. To see the video from this incident, visit our website at canbenowpod.com or our YouTube channel at youtube.com/canbenowpodcast. The Oregon legislature passed a bill this weekend authorizing $31.5 million in state funding toward a new Clackamas County courthouse. Securing the funding was the county's top priority during the 2019 state legislative session, according to the Clackamas County Chair, Jim Bernard. Clackamas County desperately needs a new courthouse that meets the needs of our growing population, he said. It's a win for our residents, businesses, and our infrastructure. The county is seeking a total of approximately $95 million from the state of Oregon toward construction of a larger modern courthouse to be located on the Red Soils campus in Oregon City. The existing county courthouse on Main Street in Oregon City was built in the 1930s when the population of the county was just over 50,000. The population today is more than 415,000. The county says the building does not have enough courtrooms to effectively administer justice from the county's growing population. It is also poorly designed and overcrowded, forcing crime victims and the perpetrators together in hallways when they come to court. This state funding will support design and other prep work for the new courthouse. It represents the second round of state funds after the county secured $1.2 million for planning in the 2017 legislative session. The total courthouse project cost is estimated at $230 million, of which the county will be responsible for approximately $135 million. The state will be asked to provide its final round of funding in the 2021 legislative session, contingent upon Clackamas County securing its share of the project. County officials are currently exploring various local funding options, which may include a voter-approved bond measure. Youth and parents are invited to a career technical showcase at Clackamas Community College to learn about in-demand jobs in Clackamas County and the skills needed to get them. This free event is Tuesday, August 13th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the college's Industrial Technology Center on the Oregon City campus. Local businesses will be on hand to offer insight to the industrial technology, welding, automotive, renewable energy, and water environmental technology fields, and the status of the current job market. Clackamas Community College staff will give tours of the facility and share information about the college's programs and trainings. Also, financial aid staff will be on hand to answer questions about paying for college. Clackamas Community College has a long-standing partnership with hundreds of companies in the area, from manufacturing to renewable energy technology. These companies actively seek CCC students, offering opportunities for internships and employment. The demand for employees in machining, welding, and renewable energy is extremely high right now, says Mike Mattson, chair of the college's Industrial Technology Department. Employers are at our door seeking qualified employees. Our employment rates are essentially 100%. Some high school students may qualify for high school career technical education courses at CCC. For those 17 to 29, the college's Tech Hire program offers paid internships, training, and advising. To attend the Career Technical Showcase, register at www.indtech.eventbrite.com. For more questions, call 503-594-3318. Police beat for the week of June 11th through the 17th, and it's a hot one, guys, for real. June 11th at 11:47 a.m., a witness reported seeing a transient trying to start a fire behind a store on Southeast 1st Avenue. Officers located the man, who was under the influence of intoxicants. What else would he be under? And took him into custody for violating probation and on a detainer out of Jefferson County, which should just be the state of Jefferson, but that's a whole nother conversation. Later that day at 5:10 p.m., a man was trespassed from a convenience store on Southeast 1st Avenue. Police say a beverage was spilled on both the customer and an employee during a disagreement over the cost of the item. Also that day, report of a wallet being found and turned into police. It's great news. I hope the person who lost it learned their lesson. On June 12th at 8:36 a.m., oh, look at that. Report of a lost wallet. Very cool. Later that day at 11 p.m., police encountered a man eating his dinner at Canby Community Park on Southwest Berg Parkway when the park was closed. The man was directed to leave. On June 13th at 12 noon, report of a theft after a business owner purchased gift cards at the direction of a person who claimed that they were the representative from PayPal. Why would PayPal be asking you to buy them some gift cards? They have all the money. That's literally what they do. On June 14th at 2:15 p.m., officers were called to investigate a fight involving two minors. Guess there was a disagreement over something down in the coal mine. Get it? Miners? Miners? Sorry, guys. Frankie wrote these jokes. He's making me say them. Later that day at 4:52 p.m., officers responded to a single vehicle crash on Northeast Territorial Road, with the driver reportedly slumped over inside. Emergency personnel were unable to wake the unconscious driver and were forced to break a window to gain access. Fortunately, the driver wasn't seriously hurt. Just drunk. They were transported to a medical facility and subsequently cited for DUI and reckless driving. On June 15th at 7:53 p.m., officers responded to a report of a disturbance on Southeast 2nd Avenue. A man reportedly punched another man for, and I swear this is true, parking his vehicle too close. The suspect fled the scene. I guess things are just getting a little too hot for him. Finally, on June 17th at 8:46 p.m., officers responded to a report of a physical altercation between two men on South Ivy Street. I mean, I could say it's for a good reason, but nope. Police said the disagreement was over the placement of a bike on a bike rack of the Canby Area Transit bus. Remember to stay cool out there, people, both physically and metaphorically.
Hey, Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They
They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships, whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology. Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of Direct Link's employees live here as well. Direct Link's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities. Paul Revere's Ride by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light. One if by land, and two if by sea, and I on the opposite shore will be, ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm for the country folk to be up and to arm." Then he said, "Good night," and with muffled oar silently rowed to the Charleston shore. Just as the moon rose over the bay, where swinging wide at her moorings lay the Somerset, British man of war, a phantom ship with each mast and spar, crossed the moon like a prison bar, and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. Meanwhile, his friend through alley and street wanders and watches with eager ears, till in the silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramp of feet, and the measured tread of the grenadiers marching down to their boats on the shore. Then he climbed to the tower of the church, up the wooden stairs with stealthy tread, to the belfry chamber overhead, and startled the pigeons from their perch of the somber rafters that round him made masses and moving shapes of shade, by the trembling ladder, steep and tall, to the highest window in the wall, where he paused to listen and look down a moment on the roofs of the town and the moonlight flowing over all. Beneath, in the churchyard, lay the dead in their night encampment on the hill, wrapped in silence so deep and still that he could hear, like a sentinel's tread, the watchful night wind as it went, creeping along from tent to tent and seeming to whisper, "All is well." A moment only he feels the spell of the place and the hour and the secret dread of the lonely belfry and the dead, for suddenly all his thoughts are bent on a shadowy something far away, where the river widens to meet the bay, a line of black that bends and floats on the rising tide like a bridge of boats. Meanwhile, impatient to mount and ride, booted and spurred with a heavy stride, on the opposite shore walked Paul Revere. Now he patted his horse's side, now he gazed on the landscape, far and near. Then impetuous stamped the earth, and turned and tightened his saddle girth. But mostly he watched, with eager search, the belfry tower of the old North Church. As it rose above the graves on the hill, lonely and spectral and somber and still, and lo, as he looks on the belfry's height, a glimmer and then a gleam of light. He springs to the saddle, the bridle he turns, but lingers and gazes till full on his sight a second lamp in the belfry burns. A hurry of hooves in a village street, a shape in the moonlight, a bulk in the dark, and beneath from the pebbles in passing a spark struck out by a steed that flies fearless and fleet. That was all, and yet through the gloom and the light, the fate of a nation was riding that night, and the spark struck out by the steed in his flight kindled the land into flame with its heat. He has left the village and mounted the steep, and beneath him, tranquil and broad and deep, is the mystic meeting the ocean tides, and under the alders that skirt its edge now soft on the sand, now loud on the ledge, is heard the tramp of his steed as he rides. It was 12 by the village clock when he crossed the bridge into Medford town. He heard the crowing of the cock and the barking of the farmer's dog, and felt the damp of the river fog that rises when the sun goes down. It was 1 by the village clock when he galloped into Lexington, saw the gilded weathercock swim in the moonlight as he passed, and the meeting house windows blank and bare gaze at him with a spectral glare, as if they already stood aghast at the bloody work they would look upon. It was 2 by the village clock when he came to the bridge in Concord town. He heard the bleating of the flock and the twitter of birds among the trees, and felt the breath of the morning breeze blowing over the meadows brown, and one was safe and asleep in his bed, who at the bridge would be first to fall, who that day would be lying dead, pierced by a British musket ball. You know the rest in the books you have read, how the British regulars fired and fled, how the farmers gave them ball for ball, and from behind each fence and farmyard wall, chasing the redcoats down the lane, then crossing the fields to emerge again, under the trees at the turn of the road, and only pausing to fire and load. And through the night rode Paul Revere, and so through the night went his cry of alarm to every Middlesex village and farm, a cry of defiance and not of fear, a voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore. For born on the night wind of the past, through all our history to the last, in the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed and the midnight message of Paul Revere. So my guests on the Canby Conversation today are Heather Gobe and her kids David and Hannah. We're here. Their company is Western Display Fireworks. It's a 71-year-old, fourth and now fifth generation family-owned company, the largest and most experienced fireworks company in the Pacific Northwest. Is that right, Heather?
Yes, that's correct.
And here on this beautiful 155-acre farm outside of Canby. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Good.
Yep, happy Independence Day coming up here. We're not sure exactly when this show is going to run, but tell us a little bit about the company, Heather. So it's amazing to have something like that here in Canby, and it's got a really interesting history.
Yes, the business was founded by my great-grandparents on a little farm outside of Canby, and they used to grow ginseng and golden seal for export to China.
Right. It wasn't their dream to do a fireworks
company.
No, it was just sort of happened.
Totally by happenstance. And so one year, apparently, as I understand it, they sent their herbs over to China and weren't able to get full payment in cash.
Right, this would have been late 40s.
Probably mid to late 40s when this all started.
Yeah, there was some economic issues happening in China.
Yes, so they sent fireworks back. And at that time, the rules
for money.
Yeah, exactly. And so then my great-grandfather was quite an entrepreneur, Mickey Wygant, and he saw the opportunity to sell the fireworks and probably make more money than farming the herbs. And back then the laws were basically non-existent around fireworks.
Sure.
So my sweet little great-grandmother used to haul boxes of M80s down to the train station in the middle of Canby and ship them all over the United States, which was completely legal at that time.
So. Yeah, that's an awesome picture, picturing a little lady just toting some M80s down to downtown Canby back in the late 1940s.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And your great-grandparents, I imagine, like, were they not expecting, obviously, to get fireworks back, or kind of were like, what am I supposed to do with this?
That's as I understand it, that's, you know, out of necessity, they figured out, you know, how what to do with it. And so
they seen fireworks before?
Yeah, they had. And I think it had been an interest of my great-grandfather's.
Okay,
he was
cool.
He was the type of guy that was kind of interested in a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
So
most guys like to blow stuff up, right, David?
Exactly. So then basically, the transition from there is they sold commercial fireworks, and then the first actual aerial display they did, which is the genesis of our company, was in Taft, Oregon, right there in front of where what's currently Moe's.
Right.
They put together, assembled a number of consumer fireworks, and that was our first true display that we did.
So let's talk about your business. You don't make fireworks that people would buy like in the tents, you know, that you guys might be buying right now. You guys who are listening to this, that's not what you do. You do shows. You do, and you do big shows. You do like Seattle Seahawks Stadium and things like that. So tell a little bit about what you do and kind of some of the shows that you do.
So what we do is we are basically a fireworks production company. So we have product we buy here domestically, and then also we import the majority of the product from overseas. And so we bring it in, and then we design the shows. We provide the insurance, the transportation, the staffing. And then, as I mentioned, the big component is the design. Mm-hmm. We do about 200 shows on the night of the 4th of July.
Oh my gosh.
And about another 150 around the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Two of the bigger ones are Seattle Seafair, which is consistently one of the top 10 shows in the nation. And then also Melaleuca Freedom Celebration, which we've been doing for 20, this will be the 27th year.
Yeah.
I sold it when I was 21, so do the math. I'm old. But we've been doing that one for some time, and that's always on the American Pyrotechnics Association top five shows in the must-see shows in the nation.
Yeah.
So that's basically, and whether somebody's doing a private wedding or it's a baseball game or what have you, they call us and we take it from start to finish, handling all the permits and the logistics, and then ultimately executing the show.
Yeah. And that aspect of business is probably, I feel like, and I've read a little bit about it, has grown pretty steadily over the years. Didn't really seem to get hit too much during the recession. I mean, maybe you felt a little bit of it, but it's sort of, people always kind of see it as a necessity to keep events alive. It's kind of, you got to have that draw. Is that what you've seen?
Yeah, it was really interesting. You know, obviously in 71 years, we've been through some real economic ups and downs.
A little bit.
Yeah. But, you know, it really does seem to be, you know, pretty insulated. You know, we'll run into situations where sometimes certain corporate sponsors will back out, or there'll be specific things that will change, but or certain events will go away. But by and large, you know, especially on the 4th of July shows, it's become, you know, community traditions. And if one company's having a down year, then nine times out of ten, somebody will step in, or from a grassroots standpoint, people, you know, give their $10 and make sure the show continues.
Cool. Well, I want to come back, ask some more questions. But mom's talking a lot, right?
Yeah.
Kids, tell us a little bit about each one of you and kind of what you guys do.
Well,
this is David, by the way, not
yes.
Hannah.
Yeah. So, I've worked here since, it's probably like 16, 17 years old.
Oh, okay. So back in the 40s when it first started.
Yeah. And basically do everything from loading the trucks, going on out to the conferences and site visits.
Sure.
Actually going out and shooting the show.
May I ask how old you are?
I am 24.
Okay, so it's been eight or 9 years.
Yeah.
It was kind of a fun place to grow up around a fireworks show.
When was my first show that I went to?
Oh yeah, he was 3 weeks old, and he was up on the barge for the big we vacated when it actually went off, but he was up on the barge for the big Seattle Ivor show that we used to do.
Oh cool.
And so he was born June 15th. So so he's been in it from the get-go.
What's it been like?
Great. It's honestly, it gets very crazy around. Not like so much right now. It's,
right.
But in a month, it'll be,
We're recording this end of April, just so you guys know. So it gets like 16-hour days, really busy, like in the run-up to July 4th, which is a huge day, obviously, for you guys, right?
Yeah. There'll be like 100 trucks in the field out there.
Yeah, you guys take on a bunch of temporary workers as well.
Yeah, we go from a company of 10 to 12 to a company of 1,000.
Oh my gosh.
Overnight. Yeah.
Wow, because you have all the technicians, you have all the distributors, all that, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, how long do those temporary jobs last? Are they like a few weeks, a month?
We have a number of people that work for a series of a few weeks, but then the bulk of the people actually just work on the 4th of July. So we have, you know, technicians that will do, you know, a handful of shows a year, plus drive for us, that sort of thing. But then we have a whole bunch of people that that's their one fireworks experience through the year is they go help on their local 4th of July display.
Sure, sure. David, you have any funny stories of working here and growing up here?
Nothing really off the top of my head. But I mean,
do we need mom to leave real quick? Mom slash boss.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I wouldn't so much say funny, but like when we get the trucks back, some of them sit over like semi-trucks. We'll have to wait for the trailers to actually get picked up.
Uh-huh.
And so you'll get some hot garbage that has been sitting in there for like... 3 weeks, and it's like you open the back and you just like, so no, yeah, it's like, oh, it's gonna be a bad one,
yeah.
But yeah, there's always some interesting finds in the back of there,
yeah.
It's not all glamorous, not all glamorous, is it?
Not all glamorous in the fireworks business. What about Hannah? Anything to say over here?
Yeah, I've worked here since I was like 16, just helping out in the summers, and then when like coming back from college, I help in the summers. Then I took 2 summers off, went and worked in Alaska, and now I'm back here working in the office full time.
Do you do fireworks stuff up there too?
No, I worked on a tour in Ketchikan, like a excursion.
Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. What was that like?
It was different. I mean, it was definitely a good experience, but yeah.
Alaska's different than Canby.
Yeah, very different.
I've been to Alaska before. It's gorgeous up there. Down to we went to the Kenai Peninsula. Oh, okay. So yeah.
Yeah, so I worked up there on a tour with a couple of my friends and then got done with school and now I'm back here.
Yeah, a lot of mountains up there, from what I remember. Mm-hmm. I think that's where all the spare mountains go.
Yeah.
So what do you think of working here? What's it been like?
I like it. It's fun to be able to work alongside my mom and my brother. And I feel like as I get older, I've taken a bigger role. So yeah. I've actually become more interested in wanting to learn, not just kind of a day-to-day going through the routine.
Yeah, and you guys are both looking to kind of stay with us and be the fifth generation of Western Display here. That's the plan.
Yeah. That's the plan.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to arm wrestle over who gets it?
Yeah.
I wonder, that's why we both you guys can't see them, but Heather's sitting in the middle. I thought that was just, you know, an accident, but I think there was a reason for it. But.
Separate us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so one question I have, this is fun for me because this is something I know nothing about. Like, I love fireworks, but I've never thought about, like, I wonder if there's a job of a person who makes this show. Like, mm-hmm. That's something that's new to me. And so what goes into making a fireworks show and making that production? Can you tell us, you know, just the next couple hours, can you talk about that?
I'll keep it brief, but it's one of those things that I think to the person,
a lot of people don't think about.
No, to the person that's ever become involved, either working here or a customer that we've kind of walked them through the process, every single person walks away and goes, I had no idea, you know, that they
sure.
But basically there's a number of different steps, and it starts with ordering the product.
Is it different for the, and I don't mean to interrupt, but no. Is it different for the really big shows down to the small ones, or are there some things that are really similar to the process that you're about to describe?
There's certain elements of the process that are the same, and there's other things that are just wildly different.
Okay, well, let's talk about the basic process.
So the basic process is the product is ordered about a year and a half in advance.
Wow.
And so that's always a challenge, is to forecast our needs that far in advance.
Of course.
So we place our orders with the suppliers and then start contacting our customers.
Yeah, you want to get that right. That's,
Yeah, because there's not really a second chance.
Right.
So then we start working with our customers to finalize their budgets, and a lot of the shows have music, and we have that sort of that production element with it. We also handle all the permitting, and so there's some of the shows we do will have five permits just for one show, and so we have basically a full-time person that does all that. So all the paperwork is processed simultaneously with kind of working with the customer on their needs and wants. Then the show is packaged, and we have military grade magazines in the back that hold all the actual fireworks themselves, and there's a script that's created that says exactly what firework is gonna fire when, and so that
like numbered or named.
It's by time and by location.
Okay.
So the barges or sites are laid out in such a way where, you know, we have to designate exactly what product is going from what location at exactly what time.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it's many things simultaneously. So when you're envisioning a certain effect, You have to, you know, you have to basically write the program that way and then make sure it's packaged that way and then set up that way that those elements are going, you know, exactly when they're designed to go.
Right.
So once the show is packaged, then it hangs out here until it's ready to leave. At that time, then we have to load the truck with the equipment, the fireworks, then you have a crew that, you have a CDL hazmat driver that drives it there, you have a crew that shows up, executes the show, and then cleans up afterwards and brings the truck back. And there's just a bunch of things going on parallel from the paperwork to the actual execution.
Are the fireworks, are they like fired by hand or is it like a computer that pushes the button and it all just goes?
There's a couple different ways. Virtually all of our non-4th of July shows are now fired either with an electrical panel or with a computer. But then on the 4th of July, just out of necessity, because there's only the actual firing systems are so expensive that we have a whole bunch of shows that are what they call hand fired.
Okay.
So they go out there, they've got, you know, firemen turnouts on and they go out there with a highway flare and they ignite them manually. So we have a number that still fit into that category. And then
they shout fire in the hole.
Yeah, they very well may.
Maybe under the breath.
Yeah. But so there's that. And then there's those that are electrically fired with a panel. And then the third element are the computer shows. And those are the ones that are pre-programmed to a script. And those are all fired by the computer system.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about like scripts and stuff. Do you approach it like how do you approach it as far as what you want the people watching to take away? I mean, like, you're somewhat limited with fireworks, right? You can't like do a movie or tell like a story in that way or whatnot, but you can obviously create feelings, and with your experience I'm sure you know different ways to do that. And I'm also thinking, like, when clients approach you, like, I wouldn't know. I'd be like, I want it to be really sparkly, you know, like, I want it to be cool. Like, you probably don't get necessarily a ton of help from clients sometimes, or?
Yeah, we do have certain clients that'll come in and they'll have, like, a certain vision around, you know, a color scheme or, you know, certain elements that they want. More often than not, these big shows they're really dictated by the music. And so the sponsor will prepare.
So you start with the song?
We start with the song. The sponsors will prepare, you know, professionally done musical soundtracks. And then we design to that soundtrack, and that really kind of dictates, you know, the effects.
Well, you mentioned some of your bigger shows that you do. I think you might have forgotten to mention the biggest one, which is obviously Canby's show. I don't know how you forgot that, Heather, but that's okay. That's fine. But no, Canby's show is a big deal, obviously, for our listeners and for our community. You guys have done it for a number of years, right?
Yeah, we've done it since the inception. And I'm trying to think. I think it was 2015, the Canby Volunteer Firefighters stepped in and took it over. It kind of, even though we had tried to donate, we had donated money to the show over the years, it kind of dissipated, and it was, you know, there wasn't much to it anymore. And the Canby Volunteer Firefighters really had a vested interest in making sure that the show was continued and was successful, because it was so instrumental in limiting the fires from illegal consumer fireworks. So they stepped in and wanted to make it happen. They approached us.
When was that?
That was, I believe, 2015.
Okay.
So we and we really wanted to have a hometown show that we are super proud of.
Sure.
And so it was nice to have a partner in that they wanted the same. So since then, they've been raising funds, and then we've been matching half of those funds. So we've been contributing $5,000 a year towards the show.
Oh, cool.
And it
weren't bang for their buck.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. And it, you know, and it really, you know, we're laughing about that. I didn't mention one of the biggest shows we do is Canby, but it's actually a show we're very, very proud of. And it's
people love it. Yeah.
And it's become a very, very respectable show, and is as big as just about any other community in the Willamette Valley. So
cool. Well, thank you guys so much. It was really good to talk to you and to hear about your company, and happy 4th.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean, and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon.
with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore, it's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability, with a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people.
And also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
True story. When we first started the Can Be Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers. Just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
So, you will see that when we go back here, that there's a reason why they're so far back here is because they are full of explosives. So, the first we'll go is a V1. And on the outside, it has a blast door that is covered, with the locks are covered so you can't shoot them off.
It's like multiple layers of doors. Multiple really
layers
thick.
Of doors. And then, so the building is made out of, so these are like cinder blocks, but they're filled with rebar.
Okay.
And reinforced. So, yeah. So basically, in the event that anything were to ever happen, that it would go up. And if you look outside here too, there's berms about as high as the wall, so
yeah,
try and contain, but yeah, you would know, you would feel it in Canby, in Oregon City. So we have basically all of our shells that we have are kept in bins here.
Uh-huh.
And so we go in, every single shell has a different effect, so we carry everything. This is an 8-inch shell, everything from 2.5 all the way up to 10 inches.
This is like the coolest thing I've ever seen.
This is the 10-inch shell. Like, you can carry this.
Oh my gosh. Like, okay.
You gotta feel it.
What is that, like 20 pounds?
Yeah. And this will break 1,000 feet across in the air. Like,
wow.
Just to give you an idea. So these are basically all just different effects. Every single bin is a different effect.
Okay, so they're called things like jellyfish. I don't know how to say that.
A trebillion with purport and yeah, multicolor.
Blue ring, silver crossing.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're very descriptive names. They're not like badger or.
There's know, some like of them names. Like jellyfish and like. Yeah, they're
but jellyfish, that's probably descriptive too.
Yeah.
Is it or no?
Kinda.
Yeah,
I mean.
Sort of looks like a jellyfish.
Sort of looks like a jellyfish. So we got these and we have. All the way up, like I said, from 2.5 to 10 inch.
Uh-huh.
And this is just the what we store for to pull on hand. And as soon as one of these is empty, we go back and to our case storage and like grab one of these and just fill the bin up.
Okay.
So yeah, these are all individual shells. And then we have some single shot stuff back here. Mines. But the I think the coolest thing in the industry is multi-shot boxes.
Okay.
So basically what it is it is a, if you imagine a bunch of mortar tubes together in a box.
Okay.
It's a one-time use deal. So you set this out and there'll be a fuse that's coming out of the end. And you essentially light this, and it will go for this box goes for 25 seconds and 25 shots. So it's nice, you can just set a bunch of these up, and instead of having each individual mortar
one by one.
Yeah,
yeah.
And a lot of we do a lot of all box shows, so it really cuts down on like the equipment and yeah. Costs.
So you would just string up a bunch of these together sometimes to make a big show.
Yeah, so basically what you do is you hook it up here. For hand lights, you just come in with
a road flare, like a lit road flare, and just touch it to the tip. And
run like heck.
Yeah, that's like the most rudimentary way of doing it. And what we do for all of the big shows, it's a electrical firing match.
Okay.
It's a squib. And you just stick it right where you would light it with the rose fusee. And yeah, it basically, it's programmed to go off at the exact time. Like the program that we use now, it can like shoot shells and then break on musical notes.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, like magic.
Yeah.
And just to describe what David and I, we're in this like bunker. he just described what the boxes are. There's like, what, like 5,000 of these boxes
and
all around.
This is empty. This is empty right
now. Yeah, I know.
This is going to be like, as soon as we get the containers.
It will but be, even so, there's like hundreds of them all around us. Like,
oh, yeah, and this is just the first building.
Yeah.
So there, this is the, like, the biggest footprint. So, but yeah, this is like a military grade bunker. A lot of, like, nobody really has these. It's not something that people in this industry.
Oh, I've got one of these.
Right? Exactly. Even in this industry, people say so what they do is they store them in like shipping containers and like that, which is
so
really
this
dangerous.
Common in the industry.
No, not really. This is like the next level. And so, to give a description, the you can't have any electricity in the building. So this is what serves as
the fire hazard.
Yeah. So basically it's two separate atmospheres in here. The top one has all the lights and has like glass over the top of them.
Okay. Okay.
So we can walk or we can jump in the car, go down and look at the other one.
Yeah, let's walk. Saying more about those tens.
Yeah, it's you definitely know when it goes off. You're sitting there watching the show and you're like, is that a 10? Is that a 10? And as soon as the 10 goes off, you're like, oh, that was definitely a 10.
That was it.
Yeah, the whole sky lights up. It's nuts. And
it sets cars alarm. Yeah, car alarms.
You feel it in your chest.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like the closest that I've probably been was it was out in the lake. Out in the middle of Lake Union, and you could feel the break in your chest, and that's and they're 1,000 feet away too.
Yeah, but and I just can't stress enough, like it's so beautiful out here. You got like the like gorgeous woods, like
right,
you know, old pristine, like a sanctuary, and then these like bunkers that aren't don't even necessarily seem that weirdly out of place. Like you know what I mean?
No.
Like they sort of look like older kind of farmy type buildings. And
my grandparents have always been not anti hunting, but like this is the. This is like the nature sanctuary. Nobody hunts out here. So there's always like 10 deer just hanging out. And
no idea what's in these buckets.
No. And they've gotten to the point now that it's like, they just look at you. You just drive by and they're just looking at you like,
what are you doing here?
Yeah, we know you're not going to hurt us.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely wouldn't look at the building and be like, oh, that's full of fireworks.
Right, yeah, totally.
Low key. And that's not, you don't want to be advertising. So these glass doors are about twice as big. They're like, what, 8 feet?
Yeah.
At least. And like 5 inches thick. But that's, this is all of our case storage for our multi-shot boxes.
Okay.
So basically, every single one of these is a multi-shot box, like I was telling you before, that has the different effects. But these go from 1 inch in diameter up to 3 inches.
Okay.
Yeah, in different effects and everything like that. So,
do you guys have a number, like, you know, for a July 4th, how many fireworks come through this facility? You know, the multiple facilities. Do you have any idea?
Hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
Like hundreds of thousands, because what we do at the...
Every year.
Every year,
yeah.
And so when we finish a show, you go and you count how many cases are in it, and you write the weight. So I kind of like, I don't...
You kind of know like per show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the bigger shows, obviously.
And you guys do 400 or 500.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gets pretty crazy down here. But yeah, basically, this will be completely full. Like, so we're waiting on three more containers.
It's pretty full now. I mean,
it's pretty full now, but like, it literally gets to the point of where you can't fit anything else in here.
Yeah.
Like, it's so full.
And again, guys, there's just hundreds of boxes. They're all different shapes and sizes. Some of the stacks are like twice as tall as I am. It's really cool. And just imagining, yeah, like each one of these boxes are going to be put in a show that's going to make somebody's Independence Day or July 4th somewhere in the country special. That's really cool that it all has its genesis right here. Man, this is fun, right?
Yeah, it is. It really is. It gets really stressful down to the like end of the 4th of July because one, I'm usually like everybody else is gone, so I'm the one who's here.
Yeah.
So if something goes wrong, I have to like jump in a truck and drive to Haines or something like four hours away. But I got lucky 2 years ago that they needed help down in Canby, so I actually came down with a couple of my buddies and we helped set up the Canby show.
That's awesome. Yeah, to be able to do something in your hometown.
Exactly. And,
well, I think I've seen a lot of the cool stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for taking me around.
Yeah, no problem. Glad that you guys could come out here and
me too.
Get the whole experience, not just talk to us.
Yeah, yeah. No, this was, you know, don't tell Heather and Hannah, but this was definitely the highlight for me.
I'm glad you could come down here, though, and actually see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you're saying, a lot of people just don't understand or think about it.
Well, he's done it. John Tate, the co-founder of Better Homes and Gardens in Canby, and his German Shorthair pointer dog, Jax, have spent the last 2 months on a cross-country bike ride. They set out from Canby in April to raise money and awareness for Canines for Warriors, a nonprofit that rescues and trains shelter dogs to be service animals for military veterans coping with service-related trauma. This week, they reached their final state, Florida, as he has, on a couple of occasions, Frankie reached out to John by phone to see how he and his faithful best friend are holding up.
Hey, Tyler.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good. You're not out in the woods again, are you?
I'm not. Back in civilization this time. What about you? Where are you located right now?
I right now am in Crestview, Florida.
Where
you
is
heard
that?
Of it?
I've heard of Florida.
It's in there somewhere.
Okay.
I'm still in the panhandle.
Okay. So northern Florida.
Yes.
You were just in Louisiana a few days ago, so, right?
I was, and then one day in Alabama, hopped right through there, and last night was in Pensacola, Florida.
Well, I've heard of Pensacola.
Yeah, that's kind of a big one.
Yeah.
That's where they told me that they call this section of Florida, Florabama.
Oh,
they don't consider themselves part of the same state as the more southern Floridians.
Yeah, why is that?
And I don't know. I think they think they're more real country.
Oh, gotcha.
The city slickers are
they're urbanites.
The southerners, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been about a month since we checked in on you. How are you and Jax doing?
Doing just great. He's sacked out next to me right now after a long, hard, thundery day.
Oh, weather?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, we really, really went through it. And unfortunately, I can't really document the worst of the weather because I can't get my phone out. You know, during the worst of the weather.
Right.
This is that crackling, ripping, sky-ripping lightning and heavy rains. And, you know, not that bad as long as the lightning doesn't hit you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's better than 100-degree heat with 70% humidity.
Yeah. Well, I won't tell you what the weather has been like here because I don't want to make you
too jealous or homesick, but
my wife has already done that.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, there's nothing better than Oregon in the summer.
I know,
we have it so good.
Yeah,
they have really big weather here.
That's what I was gonna
while
say.
We complain sometimes.
I've done some. Well, we used to live in southern Missouri, which is sort of that area, but I've done some traveling down there as well, and just you described it really well as far as the big weather. I mean, like, it rains out here in Oregon, you know, all the time. Like, we get a lot of rain, but when it rains in that area, it's like the sky is trying to kill you. Like, it is just, it doesn't rain that as much, you know, and often the storms are pretty quick, like they blow over, but they are furious when they come, or they can be.
Yeah. So I'm experiencing that, and you know, it wasn't predicted.
Yeah.
What we went through today, but we were ready.
Yeah. Good.
And I don't need rain gear even because it's not cold.
Yeah.
It's just he needs. You know, I put a little cover over his trailer, and we keep going.
Yeah.
Turn the blinky lights up to the maximum brightness.
Right.
And hope that people have good windshield wipers.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I hope that some of our listeners have been following your blog and your updates as you've been going through this now for a couple months, this wonderful, amazing journey. Tell us a little bit more about some of the people you've met along the way.
Well, I continue to meet nice and kind people, and they continue to surprise me by not knowing what I'm doing, you know, not knowing what I'm out here for. And then when they find out, it's like, oh, that's great. And they're even nicer, you know?
Yeah.
And people around here and, you know, from Louisiana through Mississippi and my one night in Alabama, have been very, very kind and welcoming. Mm. I haven't interacted with as many people because I'm traveling much faster.
Oh, okay.
Than I was. It's flat here, and I can move, and I'm getting tailwinds most days.
Right.
So,
and there's also something about a huge, gnarly storm, you know, right at your backside that can be pretty motivating on the legs.
Yes, it's very motivating. Like, I don't want to be like the minister on Caddyshack having the perfect golf game, and then it ends.
Well, you must also just be like, and I know you trained for this before you set out on your journey, but you must just be in incredible cycling shape at this point as well, now 2 months in.
I think so.
Yeah.
The Rocky Mountain legs work really well in Florida.
Yeah.
But, you know, the training, I would say if anybody out there is contemplating doing this kind of trip,
mm-hmm.
you really don't need to train that much.
Mm-hmm.
You just do shorter miles.
Yeah. On the job training.
Your body's just going to turn into what it, yeah, that is training. It's on the job.
Yeah. Cool. Well, the end is in sight. Jacksonville's your target. About how far do you have still on the way?
I think it's like 300, 350 or so.
That's nothing.
So the planned ETA is July 8th or 9th. Yeah, I think I'm just going to snooze and wake up there.
There you go.
July 8th or 9th.
Okay, next
we'll
week.
We'll be there. Unless there's some really, you know, really bad weather.
Yeah.
Something, some kind of cataclysmic equipment breakdown. My bike here is starting to make some noises, and I'm just trying to get it to make it there, and I'll worry about those things later. But, you know, if something happens, it might take an extra day or something.
Yeah. Well, sounds like you're in your final week of this journey. Have you had the chance? I know you get a lot of time to think. Have you started to kind of reflect on, you know, now that you're so close to the end and so much has passed before you, what is kind of your thinking been about this process and what you're doing?
Well, first, let me say I am by distance and time, hopefully close to the end. I've got like, I think $8,450 left to go to get to my goal, which is to provide two warriors with two dogs. And, you know, that, so I'm thinking about that, and I'm trying to be, you know, I've mostly had to just focus on pedaling the bike, and now I'm really hoping that we can save two dogs and they save two warriors. We're at 21,550, I think, and the goal was 30,000. It cost $15,000 to raise and train one of these dogs and to house the veteran for 3 weeks and, you know, do all the support that they give the veteran for free for the lifetime of the dog. And, all that.
Yeah, they provide food and medical care and all this stuff. They really make it so it's not a burden to the veteran receiving these animals.
They do. And it's a twofer, and you're saving a dog and you're saving a person, and you just can't, I don't know, you can't put a price on it. So if anybody listening has $5, you could do worse with $5 than to send it to Canines for Warriors.
Yeah.
So that's something I've been thinking about. But as far as thinking about the process, the undergoing this journey for that group, I couldn't, you know, I think I told you this before. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have done this if it weren't for that cause. That spoke to my heart, and the more I learn and the more veterans I talk to en route, or people who just jump out and say, "God, thank you for doing this," you know, my son is in Iraq right now or whatever, the more I feel that this is worth it. This is not yet, this being the dogs, are not yet considered mainstream treatment for the purposes of the Veterans Administration being able to, you know, offer dogs to people who need them. That is about to change this year with the results of a study that's being finalized, and I think it's going to come out sometime this summer. So I'm hoping that it does. And all of a sudden, they'll be mainstream, and this dogs, not drugs thing, which already has anybody who knows dogs and loves dogs, it's intuitively obvious that they would help. That's going to be, you know, there's going to be science behind it, and that should change things. But I think that we need to support groups like this, just because it's the only thing that really, really works. It's taking people that are on or already on the standard treatments and still having problems, still not leaving the house, still not present with their families, and it's converting them it's restoring them to productive members of society. So, you know, I'm a very strong advocate of Canines for Warriors and other organizations like them that do this for veterans.
Yeah, absolutely. They are an awesome organization, and what you're doing as far as raising money and awareness for a group like this, I think, is so cool. And if folks are listening to this and are interested in learning more about what the group does or how they can support them, there's information about that on your website and your blog, which is rollingwithjacks.com, or you can just look up the organization. It's K9s, that's the letter K and the number 9 for warriors.com. But yeah, I think it's really cool, and especially with this episode coming out on the 4th of July, I think it's really important to, as we're enjoying the freedoms, to blow stuff up and to barbecue some hamburgers and hot dogs and maybe tie on a couple with our friends and family. I think it is really important to just take a moment and remember and say thank you and do what we can to actually show substantial and meaningful thanks to the men and women who have made those freedoms possible and who have safeguarded and protected those freedoms over the years.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I couldn't have said it better.
Well, thank you. I don't know if that's true. I bet you could have, but... Last question, what's kind of the outlook, what's the end process here? When you arrive in Jacksonville, you're going actually to the headquarters of Canines for Warriors, is that right? That's the final stage?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I'm hoping to get to see, a little bit under the covers of what they do and see their facility and meet the trainers and the people who make all this happen.
Cool.
There hopefully will be some of the volunteers. They have a lot of volunteer people that fulfill many roles. There's a lot of people that it takes to make something like this work, and I'd like to meet as many of them as I can.
Sure.
And then I'm going to rent a car, I guess a van, and throw the bike and trailer and Jax in there, and I'll keep rolling with Jax all the way back home.
Okay, so you're driving back, kind of taking the easy road back.
Yes, yes. I'm not gonna ride my bike back.
Yeah, I hear you.
Is that what you were?
I don't blame you. Are you going to take a different route, maybe see a little bit more of the country than you saw on the way out? Or are you just straight line?
So, but I haven't planned it out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know exactly how I'm going to get back, but
cool.
I'll figure it out. Cool. That's one thing this bike touring has taught me. You'll figure it out. I've made so many elaborate plans that one little thing happens and the whole plan has to be reinvented on the spot. But now I just reinvent things on the spot. I don't go through the stage of acting like I'm going to be in control of everything along the way. We'll figure it out.
Cool.
We'll look at which way Jax's nose is pointing.
follow his nose.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, definitely keep us posted. Obviously, there will be a lot of folks that will be here at home that are going to be really excited to see you and welcome you back. I'm sure there's going to be we had a party to send you off. I'm sure we're going to have a bigger party to welcome you back home, and especially to see Jax. I mean, you're all right, John, but people have definitely been missing Jax back here, so...
Maybe I'll get to hold the leash.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, we'll see. I'm sure some other people are going to want to hold the leash as well, but you might get a turn.
Okay. Looking forward to it.
Thanks so much, John. Be safe on the final leg of your journey and on your drive back. And if there's anything else we can do to help, let us know.
Well, thank you, Tyler. Thanks a lot. And thanks for supporting and staying in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy Independence Day.
Yeah, same to you. Take care.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved him $14,000 in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Yeah, bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Western Display Fireworks and John Tate. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. Are you ready to rock? Rock! Well, if not, you've got a... That was awful. I'm going to not do that again. You've got about a week and a half to get ready. We'll help you get in the mood with our next episode, which previews the 9th Annual Hair Fest. It's the mother of all tribute band concerts, featuring tributes to Journey, Aerosmith, Guns N' Roses, Heart, and Eagles, and much more. We'll ask the organizers why they don't, you know, just get all the real bands. If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow. Or to learn how you can start supporting our show and gain access to exclusive content through Patreon, please visit canbenowpod.com/plus.